This is Uprising. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. You can now watch Uprising on Free Speech TV, which airs on Dish Network Channel 9415, DirecTV Channel 348, and on hundreds of part-time cable affiliates and on Roku. A major blast at an ExxonMobil refinery at 9 a.m. yesterday morning in Torrance, California, injured four workers. The explosion was so strong that it reportedly shattered the windows of nearby buildings and released massive amounts of smoke into the air. Torrance Mayor Patrick Furry made a statement saying, quote, "The most important thing is to shelter in place, stay indoors, no outdoor activity, turn the air conditioners off, and keep the windows closed." Firefighters and Exxon workers extinguished a small fire that resulted and contained a gas leak resulting from the explosion. While Exxon says it is investigating the cause of the explosion, a spokesperson for the United Steelworkers, which represents the Torrance refinery, told press that the blast took place near the Fluid Catalytic Cracking Unit, or FCC. Apparently, Exxon was planning on overhauling the FCC later this month. The 750-acre plant produces more than 150,000 barrels of refined oil a day. We're going to go very soon to Antonia Yuhas, a leading oil and energy expert and award-winning investigative journalist. She's a former fellow at the Investigative Reporting Program at the University of California, Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism. She's written a couple of books. One of them is called Black Tide, The Devastating Impact of the Gulf Oil Spill. And her latest, The Tyranny of Oil, The World's Most Powerful Industry and What We Must Do to Stop It. Welcome to Uprising, Antonia.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, as an oil and energy expert who's reported on such refinery fires, I imagine you were probably not very surprised when you heard about this explosion, right?
Well, I mean, yes, because these are terrible tragedies whenever they happen. And so it's terrifying to hear about them, but no, because they happen with far greater frequency than people are probably aware of. And particularly what was unique with this explosion is that it happened in Southern California, and, you know, TMZ forwarded one of my tweets about it. You know, this is a unique media environment. And the good thing is there was a lot of immediate coverage. But within that context as well, Exxon has been, as it always is, very good at holding and consolidating information within its own purse. And the only reason why we know the extent of the damage at the refinery at this point is because there was one media helicopter that went over the site. And that's where we got these pictures, the sort of post-apocalyptic photographs of the extent of the explosion at the within the refinery, blown up cars, blown up infrastructure. But Exxon was saying at the time from the outside, this is just an incident. There was just a gas flare, and trying to significantly downplay the significance of what took place.
Now, seismologists, according to the LA Times, said the power of the blast was equivalent to a magnitude 1.4 earthquake. It sent ash-like substances into nearby neighborhoods. Are we lucky that nobody actually died? I mean, how dangerous are such fires?
Oh, absolutely. For the past 5 years alone, every year, there have been five workers who have died per year at U.S. refineries. This is, you know, immediately very dangerous to the workers. Just 2 years ago, at an Exxon refinery in Beaumont, Texas, a worker died in an explosion at the site, and 11 others were injured. For nearby residents, of course, there's the ongoing concern about what's in the air. I heard reports of ash around the refinery 2 miles away. Two dozen schools were told to shelter in place. Just last year, 2 years ago here, 3 years ago now, up in Richmond, where I am, in near San Francisco, where I'm at, we had a massive explosion that sent thousands of people to the nearby hospital because of what was in the air, and sent several workers to the hospital. So these are dangerous explosions, and dangerous, obviously, particularly to the workers at the refineries, but also to the nearby residents. And of course, the refineries are regular daily hazards to both the workers and the communities because of Clean Air Act problems, not abiding to the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, polluting the environments on a daily basis.
And I want to ask you about the Clean Air and Clean Water Act in just a minute, but let's turn to this Richmond explosion that took place nearly 3 years ago now. You wrote in an article for the LA Times about it and warned of more such incidents, one of which just took place yesterday in Southern California. In that incident in Richmond, where you said, you know, thousands of people needing medical treatment, what sort of reforms have emerged from that? Has the industry taken a note? And how has it galvanized local communities around that refinery?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is a huge problem. As I said, you know, just for decades, refineries in the United States have been suffering serious safety problems. And after a massive Texas City refinery explosion at a BP refinery in 2007 that killed 15 workers, the U.S. Chemical Safety Board did an analysis of the safety of U.S. refineries and found back then serious problems across all refineries in the United States. They expressed severe concern about the status of the safety of these refineries. And then, you know, after the Richmond refinery explosion in 2012, they reiterated again their concern about refineries still across the United States, that necessary changes had not been put in place. And then they looked specifically at California and they said, you know, severe concerns about the state of California safety and hazard prevention. They called for a number of reforms to take place at the state level to ensure the safety of our refineries. And, you know, basically not much has been done. Right. There was an interagency government panel set up by the governor to look at the safety issue and to propose changes. It was a good working group. There was representatives from labor and community groups and the government, and they put out a good report. Unfortunately, that good report, which raises a number of very serious concerns about the safety of our refineries, hasn't yet led to action. There are some proposed rule changes that came about. And one good legislative change, which was requiring better training for the contractors that work at these refineries. But really, that's it. So now, not much has changed.
In the refinery in Torrance, the particular part of the refinery called the Fluid Catalytic Cracking Unit, or the FCC, was apparently something that Exxon was planning on overhauling just this month, which I think points to what you were saying about the just the very poor state of these refineries that are in need of repairs. I mean, is this just an issue of the bottom line that, I mean, Exxon, put into context how massive this company is in terms of profits, in terms of global reach, and they're letting their refineries near residential areas literally fall apart? They're not keeping them up to date?
Yeah, and it's I think it's shocking when people hear that the main critique about the companies is that they're just not spending enough money on upkeep of their refineries and safety of their refineries, that they are running, you know, they're spending as little as they can to keep the refineries, you know, basically working, and that's it. And they're not being asked to do more. And these refineries are old. The Torrance refinery is at least 85 years old. The Richmond refinery is over 100 years old. And rather than build new refineries, because that would require them to, under the U.S. Clean Air Act, put in place the safest, best available technology, they just keep sort of stitching together their old refineries so they don't have to meet that standard. And what we see are the results of, you know, somewhat decrepit refineries. And in the case of Chevron up here, it was a 36-year-old pipe that had corroded that caused the explosion. You know, and as you say, these are the largest corporations on the planet. Exxon, $33 billion in profits last year. That was a bad year for them. They've gotten $45 billion in profits before, about $456 billion in revenues last year. Definitely based on revenue, one of the largest corporations on the entire planet, the second largest in the United States. The only company that has higher profits in the United States is Apple. And this is a gargantuan beast that certainly has the money. And so the United Steelworkers, which represents the Torrance refinery, is in the midst of a strike around the country, calling on all oil corporations to invest in the safety of their workers and of their refineries. The Torrance refinery, there wasn't actually a strike taking place there, but it is represented by United Steelworkers. And one of the concerns that the steelworkers have been bringing to light for years now is that the oil companies have been trying to, for a very long time, break the power of the unions at these refineries by increasing the number of contract workers that are there. And the Torrance refinery is about 50% contract workers, four of whom were injured yesterday in the explosion. And these workers have less training, they have less protection. It's harder to keep track of them because they're not counted as employees, which means that OSHA doesn't keep statistics on them when they're injured and hurt and killed. It's a huge problem, and we saw it, you know, highlighted again yesterday.
And so the workers in this field are the ones who know firsthand what the problems are. They see them. In your piece for the LA Times a few years ago, you wrote that the USW estimates that at least one fire occurs every week at a U.S. oil refinery, operating in non-compliance with federal and state regulations, moreover, appears to be all but standard operating procedure across the country. So let's talk about federal regulators and the fact that they seem to not be doing their job if this is happening with such occurrence, such a frequency. And also, how is it that these companies are not being held accountable for violating the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, when such things are happening so frequently?
Yeah, I mean, most of these refineries are in a constant state of non-compliance for Clean Air Act requirements.
I mean, when individuals break the law, we're indicted, we're convicted, we're sent to prison. But corporations, you can break the law, basically.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that is a huge problem when it comes to domestic refineries is that we actually have good laws on the books. In most cases, very good laws, they're not implemented. And we don't have the person power within the federal agencies to actually implement the type of oversight that's necessary. A lot of the rules, while they're good rules on the books, actually require self-enforcement by the companies. And guess what? They don't do that enforcement. And it's even worse at the state level. So actually federally, OSHA does a fairly good, well, comparatively, OSHA does a good job of looking at refineries when you compare it to the state level, which is almost non-existent, the level of oversight and enforcement. And then even when the laws are enforced, the fines are just ridiculous.
So yeah, the cost of doing business, basically.
Yeah, I mean, they're not even a decimal on a decimal on a decimal.
Wow.
And, you know, frankly, this is because the communities that tend to pay the most attention to the state of our refineries are fence line communities that also tend to be incredibly disempowered, low income, facing a number of other, you know, challenges in their day-to-day lives, having to deal with day-to-day health consequences and of living near the refineries. And their voices don't tend to be heard very loudly. And the company's voices are significantly louder or significantly more adhered to. And so there's a tendency in this country to just have a sort of blithe ignorance to these ongoing threats. And, you know, at the state and federal level, the oil companies have a lot of power and their desire to not be regulated is basically being adhered to. And when you look now, when we have a Congress that is at every level trying to reduce funding for every agency, when one of our biggest problems in this area is just simple enforcement, getting people out to the refineries every day to see how they're running, to now reduce those budgets further, to reduce that person power further, is not, you know, is a very, very dangerous proposition.
And so we have this situation that emerges that, you know, many folks term environmental racism, where refineries and poor communities tend to be next to one another because wealthier communities wouldn't tolerate refineries being built. Poor people are, you know, the housing next to the refineries ends up being the cheaper housing where poor people tend to end up living. And so this is the sort of thing that happens. Now, let's talk about the impact to communities, not just when explosions happen, which is, of course, quite severe, but the sort of slow motion disaster that refineries are, even when they're not exploding, they are slowly spewing pollutants into the air, not just greenhouse gases that has the long-term effect of climate change, but toxic pollutants that has a short-term impact on the public health of people living there, right? So, I mean, these are disastrous all around.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I think, you know, we need to give an enormous amount of support and awareness to who engages in these struggles day to day. And basically, you're talking about small community organizations, you know, barely funded, that are the ones that day to day are engaged in this fight, trying to keep these refineries safe. And it's tiny little legal organizations that are the one launching the lawsuits to get those small fines to hold these refineries to account. And what they're struggling with every day is constant releases of pollutants into the air and non-adherence to Clean Air Act standards. And what that leads to, and as well as groundwater pollution, is very common. And many of these fence line communities, just like in Torrance, they're schools, you know, right by the fence line. They're people who live right by the fence line. And what you see as a result of the day-to-day exposure are extreme elevated levels of cancers, asthma, problems with you know, reproduction with women who live at fence line communities, and just a reduced level of health, obviously, a suffering level of health for the communities that live nearby. And there also is, you know, the regular threat of disaster, right? So this Torrance is a huge facility. It's 750 acres, as you said. It's, I think, the sixth largest producer in the state. And it's producing an enormous amount of oil every single day, or gasoline every single day. And a small explosion could be a huge explosion, of course. And it's the communities that are keeping check on that. So you also have the responsibility for making sure that there isn't a larger explosion in addition to the day-to-day human health impacts. And then you also have the economic impacts. So, you know, I'm more familiar with Richmond. Richmond is a community that has been a company town for almost 100 years until it only recently struggled to shake that off. But the economic control and political control that Chevron exercises here is very common in refinery towns. So you've got, you know, the world's largest corporations sitting within tiny communities, exercising control over local political decisions, economic decisions. And then you have, you know, the fence line communities trying to struggle just to get their you know, taxes, get the right taxes paid within the community, get their health taken care of, get the safety of workers protected. And it's often, you know, an incredibly unequal and difficult struggle.
So let's put the refinery explosion yesterday in Torrance into the long view, the broader context. I brought up climate change, but of course, the accidents associated with the transportation of fossil fuels in this country is just ridiculous. Just yesterday, we covered the train derailment in West Virginia, where an oil-carrying train with 109 cars, 107 of which were carrying oil, derailed, spilling millions of gallons of crude oil, flammable crude oil, into a river. Just weeks ago, we had another report on a pipeline leak in Montana that leaked crude oil into the Yellowstone River. Of course, we know the devastation of the BP oil spill. You mentioned the Richmond disaster. Between these trains and these refineries and these pipelines and the offshore drilling, How horribly careless is this industry, not just with the infrastructure of transportation, but with our entire climate? I mean, these are warning signs, aren't they, that we just have to end the fossil fuel industry as a whole?
Yeah, and I think there's a lot there. One is the hubris of the industry. They are one of the wealthiest industries literally the world has ever known, and very blithe, I would say, in the way that they spend that money. So one of the things that the U.S. Chemical Safety Board pointed to was that consolidation within the industry had led to some of the increased risks at the refineries. And basically what they were pointing to was the companies had gotten so big, apparently they weren't paying as close attention as a result to the various holdings that they had. But I think also their belief that their money insulated them from the need to hold their refineries in check the way they needed to. And that applies to operations across the country and across the world. And when it comes to, for example, moving fracked oil out of North Dakota, which is what the train in West Virginia was carrying, they're just not spending the money to make sure that this can happen safely. And actually, frankly, in the case of moving North Dakota frack crude, I'm not sure that it is possible to transport it safely, either by pipeline or by train, but they could certainly spend a lot more money on safety than they do right now. And that's just a further example of, that the industry is really, at this point, scraping the bottom of the barrel to get what's left of oil resources. So, going to even further depths at the bottom of the ocean, digging into tar, fracked oil out of North Dakota even really shouldn't be considered oil. It's more like a gasoline. It's highly, highly flammable. It's incredibly dangerous at the point of production, not only for the environment, but also for workers. Oil production is now the deadliest sector in U.S. employment, one of the reasons being fracked oil production because it's so dangerous. And moving this stuff, it's just being moved without any real regulation or oversight. And the National Transportation Safety Board said, basically we need to figure out a way to move, if we're going to move oil by rail, we need to move it through places that are not populated and not sensitive. And I want you to point me to a place where you think, you want to see an oil train explode, a non-sensitive area. And this is particularly worrisome right now, because not only are we facing this moment where the industry is trying to get at, really hard to get at oil wherever they can get it in the most sensitive places, they're also incredibly large and they're looking to get bigger. So the decline in the price of oil and gasoline is exposing us to another potential merger wave within the industry. And, we've got there are rumors of Exxon potentially buying BP, right. Shell potentially buying BP. And that brings me back to the criticism of the U.S. Chemical Safety Board, which cited the mergers as one of the concerns for why refineries have gotten less safe, which tends to run a little counterintuitive in our brain. You think, oh, if they're bigger and they're richer, they'll do a better job. But it seems that the opposite is true. When they get bigger and richer, they have too much to cover, and their hubris is bigger. And their willingness to just say, you know what, no one's going to hold us to account anyway, so we're going to run it, saving the most money as possible, watching the bottom line, watching the clock, more than watching, what we're actually doing.
Well, Antonia, I want to thank you so much, as always, for joining us and putting such terrible accidents as the one in Torrance into perspective. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
You too. My guest, Antonia Juhas, is a leading oil and energy expert. She's an award-winning investigative journalist. Her books include Black Tide, The Devastating Impact of the Gulf Oil Spill, and The Tyranny of Oil, the World's Most Powerful Industry, and What We Must Do to Stop It. This is Uprising. When we come back, we'll take a look at the legacy of Ethel Payne. Stay tuned.